Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A modern American epic is brought to life in the opera Dr. Atomic. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and later today we'll be talking to one of the lead characters in this opera, the bass baritone Eric Owens. But first, perhaps more than any other living composer, John Adams is known for bringing modern historical events and characters to life on the opera stage. There was Richard Nixon's historic meeting with Chairman Mao in Nixon in China, the murder of Leon Klinghoffer by the Achille Lauro hijackers in The Death of Klinghoffer, and most recently, the physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer and the creation of the atomic bomb in Dr. Atomic. The opera premiered in 2005. It's now seeing a new production at the Metropolitan Opera here in New York. And I spoke to the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, John Adams, last week, and we began by discussing the obvious question, why an opera about the bomb?
I don't think you can come up with a more succinct American myth than the atomic bomb. I mean, as an image, it's riveting. It definitely holds our attention. And I think it represents so many things about our American lives, our American consciousness, and our American unconsciousness. It represents Yankee ingenuity and our scientific prowess. If you think of it in the context of the race against the Nazis, which is what these scientists thought they were doing, they thought they were in a race to save civilization, it's a kind of thrilling narrative. On the other hand, in retrospect, we bear the burden of having been the country that introduced nuclear weapons into the world, and we're the only one so far to use it. So it is a constellation of meaning, and that, for me, is what I need if I'm going to make an opera.
Tell us a little bit about how the story unfolds here.
The allure of the story of Los Alamos and the reason why there's so many books being published about it is that it's this unique moment in time when these very young scientists all gathered in this remote desert mesa in northern New Mexico, only with the knowledge that the nucleus could be fissioned. That's all they knew. And then, a year and a half or 2 years later, they emerged with a usable atomic bomb. The opera is about the hours leading up to the detonation of the world's first atomic bomb. Everybody knows what the end's going to be. The bomb's going to go off. But there's enormous potential in this story. First of all, there's the whole theme of science. I mean, I don't know of another opera that deals with science. And when I started composing this, I live in Berkeley, California, which is crawling with Nobel physicists. It's amazing how many scientists came up to me and said how thrilled they were, because they felt what they do is an immensely poetic thing. So there's that. There's science. There's the whole moral issue. Many of these young scientists, when they found out that the bomb was going to be dropped on Japanese civilians, were outraged. And then there's the whole issue of the fact that these army and academic people just planted themselves down on what was, before had been the property of these Tiwa Indians, and they just sort of shunted them aside or made them be gardeners or maids and completely ignored the whole cosmology of these natives who had been living there for centuries.
So there is, as you say, a story, but it seems like Dr. Atomic there's a big interior story. A lot of the story is taking place inside people's minds.
Yes. The second act of Dr. Atomic is basically a 90-minute countdown. And, as the clock is ticking, time seems to get slower and slower and slower. And the characters just go deeper and deeper into their unconscious, especially Oppenheimer, who, as far as I can tell, was the most literate, the most cultured scientist that ever lived, more so than Newton or even Aristotle. He was a man who was fluent in, you know, six languages. He read Sanskrit. He could recite the Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit. He carried a little tattered volume of Charles Baudelaire poetry with him on the test site. And so I have him going into these hallucinatory moments when he sings John Donne, he sings Baudelaire. The chorus suddenly looms out of nowhere and becomes this gigantic, terrifying Shiva singing words from the Bhagavad Gita.
Well, let's hear some of that music from Act Two from the opera Dr. Atomic by my guest John Adams. That's just some of the music from Act Two of the opera Dr. Atomic by my guest John Adams, the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer. As you say, this is no Barber of Seville. and you learn that right off the bat when you walk in. What are those opening couple of minutes of sound that we hear?
The opera actually begins with a surround sound, musique concrète composition that I made mostly from industrial noises, you know, jackhammers and electrical sanders and big heavy machinery. I was trying to evoke not the 40s but the 50s because that's when I came of age. You know, my first awareness of myself in the world was in the early 1950s. And that was the darkest period of the Cold War. And I, you know, as a little school kid, maybe 4 or 5 years old, I remember seeing images of you know, Russia and China and the evil empire. And you know, I remember lying in bed as a kid and hearing a plane go over at night and thinking maybe it's the Russians and maybe this is it. They're going to drop a nuclear bomb on us. So I want to set up that eerie feeling, and it's a little bit of in quotation marks because then that's followed by this sort of overly terrifying music, which is my nod to science fiction movies, because again, that's how I first experienced the dangers of nuclear weapons. So we get that setting of okay, we're back then, and then from there, once Oppenheimer appears on the stage, we're drawn in. I hope I invite the audience in to some very, very serious stuff.
You know, it's funny. You spoke before about how the opening minutes for you might evoke the 50s. For me, having followed your career for a long time, it evokes the early years of your career when you were still known as largely a composer of electronic music. And, you know, having recounted this, you know, in your recent memoir, you know, it's kind of fun to hear that echo of the earliest part of your career in this work.
Well, I think a lot of us composers would make a lot more electronic music. It's just that it's a very hard art form. It's a tough sell. I mean, there's so few opportunities to present it. You know, you don't want to invite people to come to and sit in a dark room and just listen to stuff coming through loudspeakers. It has to sort of be mixed with some kind of medium. And, of course, you know, an opera about a nuclear bomb was an ideal opportunity for me to flourish in all of Act Two, which is basically this big hallucinatory moonscape of all these, you know, scientists and military people waiting out on the floor of the desert, waiting for the dawn to come and the bomb to go off was an opportunity to create a huge, eerie soundscape which surrounds the audience.
The ending of the opera is lush and effulgent, but it's also, it is a moment of violence. And then it's a somewhat ambiguous ending. Can you just describe for us how Dr. Atomic ends?
Well, it was very difficult because I knew as I was composing this that I was going to have to deal with an atomic explosion at the end. And, you know, even George Lucas can't pull that off. You know, anything that I would attempt to do with an opera orchestra or even with loudspeakers would be a joke. On the other hand, I felt that you couldn't have an opera about the atomic bomb and not have some symbolic explosion at the end. So there is a countdown, and the countdown just becomes more and more tense. You know, there are all these clocks going at different tempi in the orchestra, and you feel like you're just surrounded by Geiger counters and countdown clocks, and then finally this, you know, the whole theater just starts to shake with this terrifying noise. After this is over, there's this very eerie sort of postlude where it's sort of like you imagine the debris coming down and the desert dust surrounding. And out of that, you hear very quietly in the distance the voice of a Japanese woman. And she's simply saying, please, may I have some water? Mr. Tanimoto, do you know what that was? And then to her child, stay with me, stay with me. And these are actually words that, you know, a survivor of the Hiroshima blast said that he heard, you know, as people were struggling around in this horrible, you know, post-nuclear Holocaust.
So it brings up the point that all of the text in the opera is from actual sources.
That's right.
And yeah. And this particularly compelling source concludes the opera. We'll hear the conclusion of John Adams' Dr. Atomic. Before we do, though, John, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank
here
you,
in our WNYC studios, and congratulations. You can hear much more of my conversation with John Adams Tuesday night at 11 o'clock on New Sounds here at WNYC-FM. And coming up later on Soundcheck, actually in just a moment, Eric Owens plays General Groves in the opera Dr. Atomic, and he'll join us to talk about creating that role and about being on the low end of the operatic spectrum. That's coming up on Soundcheck.